Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour, and today is Wednesday, October 5th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the Internet, thanks to the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice. If you go to the website, whyagain.org, on that homepage in the upper left-hand corner, you'll find the two words, Start Here. If you click that link, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 18 years to improve the quality of my life and to most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you choose to do that, before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. And if you choose to tap on it, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to an even younger audience. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, which have been curated out by Jeannie Rice, and on that page, a link to MP3 files of shows just like this where people have actually been stepped through the worksheet process. And if you choose to listen to those, sometimes multiple times, so they can serve as a powerful tutorial for you about how to get maximum benefits from this tool in the shortest time possible. There are also a whole host of other tools in this body of work that are available free through that website, and we encourage people to go there and do that soon and often, because our experience has been it tends to improve the quality of people's lives when they apply these tools in their life. And we also have had the experience that the more people use these tools, the more it stirs up comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And we appreciate it when people call us with those or send us an email with those questions, because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. And the intention with this work is to be of service. And so if you have any of those comments or questions or answers or testimonials for us, please give us a call at 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, it will put a little icon of a hand by your phone number. And I can and will turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code. So please let us know how we can support you. What's on your mind? How has it been landing for you that we're doing the Way of Mastery this year? And going slowly, reading the Way of Mastery with commentary and offering what I think is a lot of time for comments and questions, answers and testimonials. I had somebody the other day ask me, how do I get to this if I want the archive of this show? And I said, well, you can go to the mindshiftersacademy.org website, and there's a special page for the Way of Mastery with commentary. And they said, yeah, but they've got to scroll through all these. And I, well, that's right. That's right. If it's a recent show, it's at the bottom. I can tell people just, you know, go there and scroll to the bottom. The other thing is, it isn't really blatantly obvious, but there is a search feature on that website. And when I tried this the last time, it worked, so I'm going to see if I can try this again, type it in as I go. If you go all the way to the bottom of the page, because I don't think there's an access for the search feature at the top of the page, but if you get to the bottom of the page and there's a search box, if you just type in the date you're looking for, it may show up. It might also, you know, if you have the, if one of the shows you're looking for has something in the description like caller Susan or caller Bob, you can type in that and it will probably pull right up to that show for you. It'll isolate it out. So, otherwise, you can just scroll down the list, and they're listed by chronological date for the most part, and then there's a separate page for highlights from that show, and I think there's only 6 or 7 shows on that page currently. I don't have the organizational skills and or the web programming ability to make it easier at this stage of the game. All of this is done on complete volunteer work and my own money to host the website. So if you have an idea about how to make this stuff more accessible, I'm open to it. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. I ran into somebody the other day who didn't know what that meant. So they said, oh, do you mean dash? Mindshifters-academy.org? Yes, that's the same thing, a dash symbol or a hyphen. Like we say, this work is being done as a labor of love, as an avocation, as, Michael and Jean are paying their money for their website and for hosting this internet show and donating their time. And so if you are getting benefit from it and you want to support them, there's a donation button on their webpage. And I believe there's this, you know, tax-deductible donations. I'm just donating my time and money, but I have not put in the effort to create a not-for-profit. So that's the housekeeping. We had a support group last night. We listened to some more of the Michael Singer his newest book, Living Untethered, which is basically a book version of the online course that he put out titled Living from a Place of Surrender. And that was appreciated by people, challenging in some ways and appreciated in others. And yesterday when we were in the show, we finished the second read-through of Lesson 22 in The Way of Mastery. And depending upon the comments and questions and or discussion that people want to do today, we might move on to Lesson 23, which is the second of the last lesson in The Way of Transformation. This book is divided into three books. And as I understand it, the way it was given, it was never intended to be all rolled up into one book. But that's what they decided to do and how they decided to publish it. And so the first book is titled The Way of the Heart. The second book is titled The Way of Transformation, and that's the one we're in now. And there are 12 lessons to each of those. And the third book is titled The Way of Knowing. And we are in a position to, whenever we would like, we can start Lesson 23, or the second of the last book, second of the last lesson in the book titled The Way of Transformation. And it has some rather provocative section titles, such as The Voice for Love, which is the title of the lesson, and The Decision to Become One with the Mind of All Creation, and The Release of All Illusion. And You Are in the Most Important Journey Anyone Can Ever Take, and Make a Decision to View Time Differently. So, to my mind, those are pretty provocative section titles, kind of expanding on what we've been doing in the last two lessons, which are clarion calls for deep personal work and revelation and increasingly more open and honest self-exploration. The purpose of which is, the purpose of which is just to do the thing. There's a purity here that is really strong for me. And then the purity is we're doing a thing not to accomplish something else. We're doing a thing just to do the thing. And, you know, you might say, okay, it's out of curiosity. I want to know what it would be like to live in a space where I continually ask to be shown more of creation, more of the mind of the Creator, more of the ways that my use of my own mind energy can unfold, not unfold to this or that consequence, but to just be in the unfolding. So it's not that I'm doing this because I want to make a certain amount of money, or I'm doing this because I want to be seen as a great spiritual teacher, or I'm doing this to get the perfect relationship, or I'm doing this to be at peace. It's that I'm just doing this to see what happens when I do it. It's kind of like the the thing I've mentioned quite often in the past from Rainer Maria Rilke, the idea of learning to live in the question. Not demanding an answer, not trying to rationalize out an answer that I can write down and then repeat to others, but to get increasingly comfortable living in the state of questioning, which Krishnamurti would call direct observation. Why would I do that? Just to do it. Just to see if the life that unfolds as I do that is better or worse in terms of my interpretation, preferable or not preferable to the life I've been having when I lived according to the culture's trainings. Right? My culture has been rather, I've been immersed in my culture. I have been programmed with the language and the patterns of my family and the schooling that I went through or didn't go through. I have been strongly conditioned to believe certain things and to believe that I need to be right and or I need to prove other people wrong and or I need to think I'm going to have the answer and there is an answer out there for me with a, you know, in a singular sense, there is one right answer, et cetera. That's part of the culture that I was raised in. And what if I were to just spend some time living in the question? What if there isn't one solid answer? What if there isn't the possibility for me to just find the answer? I know people who've read the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and you know, like, the answer to the most important question in the universe is in that book. And the answer is 42. You know, you can have the answer. You might have noticed there's a lot of people in your life who have answers. But like that book, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, points out, well, the answer is available. The question's a mystery. So what is the question that the number 42 answers that is the most important question in the universe? Well, we don't know that. And that's a tongue-in-cheek approach to the, I'll call it the absolute truth of our lives, which is one of the things that the Way of Mastery keeps trying to point out to us. We cannot know the capital T truth of things, especially when we're using the input from our senses as the data points in any kind of an equation. We can't know because we don't know what we don't know. We're living in a world where we're either loaded heavily onto spirituality or religion or science as our God and guru and guide. And even if you go to science and the hard science and the wonderful technology that lets us have this internet show and or satellites circling the planet and or cell phones and or rapid processing computers, that science, that body of scientists will tell you that based on the best information they know, they're only able to be aware of about 20% of the mass and energy in the universe. And their instruments are telling them, hey, you know what? There must be something else out there, but we can't see it. We can't measure it. We can't hear it. So it just makes sense to me. I might be a little wacky, but it makes sense to me that given that as a fundamental actuality in our lives, it makes more sense to me to learn to live in the question. Gee, what's going on here? I don't know exactly what's going on here. If I'm living in the question, I'm not demanding an answer. What's going on here? I'm living in this. Wow, I wonder what I might discover in the next few minutes that, or moments, or hours, or days, or years, or decades, that I have no handle on right now. Right? I've said this before, and we've talked about this, that I had somebody in my office a number of years ago, and they were saying about, you know, all these things that they need to have to be happy, and I was just moved to say, you know what, I remember 25 years ago. I'm not so old that I've forgotten all that stuff, and that's not that long ago. And I can tell you, I remember how old my kids were. I remember that I was in a marriage. I remember what my thoughts were about life and what had to happen for me to be able to retire early and have this and have that, and that's what was needed to be happy. I needed to stay married and have my kids stay healthy and get this level of education. All these things that I thought I needed to be happy, that I was working on, striving to be happier. And here I am 25 years later, and almost none of that is in my life. So if I was right back 25 years ago about what I needed to be happy, I would be a completely miserable person right now because I have almost none of it. And instead of that, what's happening in my life today is that I have a greater sense of contentment, joy at various times, purpose, connectedness, than I even knew was possible 25 years ago. So when I use my conscious logical mind to figure out I need this and I need that and I have to, you know, in order to be happy, it's all a trap and a lie. It's part of the conditioning of the culture. And great minds for hundreds, if not thousands of years have recommended that instead of living by that belief, instead of insisting on the answers, that we learn to live more in the flow, that we learn to turn our decider over. In this case, the way of mastery in the last two lessons was recommending that we learn to befriend this, the great comforter, the Holy Spirit, this inner guidance, this place within us where we can receive insight and intuition from a more informed source and make good friends with it. So we turn every decision over to that, either completely over to that other source, or we engage with that other source as a team. And before we make a decision, we ask to be shown, what should I do? Should I go left or right at this intersection? What is my gut telling me about, is this a good person to have another date with, or is this, would this be a good job for me to take the offer? Or now that I've been in this job for 2 or 3 years, what's my gut telling me about, if I stay here for another 3 years, am I going to like the results I have? That's one of the questions that comes up in a book like Necessary Endings by Dr. Cloud. The idea that, you know, he encourages people when he's working with them, whether personally or professionally. And if they're dissatisfied with something in their life, whether it's the job they're doing or the team they're on in that job or the person they've hired or the person they're working for or the person they're married to, he says, do this. Project yourself 5 years and understand, from based on what you know right now, if you stay in this relationship or this job or this current situation within the job, project out what it will feel like to you if 5 years from now you're still in this relationship or this job. Will you be happy with that? And if you want something different than you've got now, but you don't do something differently, it won't happen. Because as this book tells us from the page 5, we are co-creating our lives. We only experience the effects of the choices we make. And if we keep staying in the same relationship or staying in the same job or staying in the same pattern of beating ourselves up or staying in the same pattern of demanding answers, we're going to keep getting the same kinds of results we've been getting. So the more honest I can be with myself, the more I can let go of the negativity, the more I can understand that if I'm experiencing something negative, it's been because of what I've done with my mind energy, not because of the actuality of life. The more I can be wide open with and for myself and with and for some intimate friends, the more I'll be doing the work of the last two lessons. The last two lessons, 21 and 22, that we've been through in this work are titled this, well, 20 is Vigilance for the Kingdom, and that's, you know, a pretty raw title right there. I need to stay vigilant about where the kingdom is, and it's inside me. I need to learn, be willing to turn the focus of my intellect and my conscious mind energy inside, and I need to withdraw the energy that I would spend on judging others and focusing on them if I'm going to make a positive change in my life. And then lesson 21 says, the title is Allowance is the Doorway to the Kingdom. And one of the lesson headings was Allow All Things. And lesson 22 is Self-Honesty is the Greatest Act of Love. So it might seem like a contradiction to say I need to learn to allow everything. Well, what about this allowing myself to be in judgment and judge everyone as wrong and bad and me as right? The allowance isn't about accepting things without changing them. It's about understanding the negativity that I create in my mind when I instantly reject something. It's about, and this came up in the support group last night, somebody said, you know, when I hear this, I think, you know, that I shouldn't do anything about the things that are unsatisfactory. And my response to that statement by the person in the group was, that's not how I hear this message. Right. If there's something in my life that I'd like to have be different, I can use my thoughts and words and actions and resources to try and change it. And the point of these messages is not don't change what you don't like. The point is don't create a bunch of negative emotional energy either before you change it or in the process of changing it or if you're unable to change it. And the example I used in the group last night was, let's say I've got this messy desk and somebody comes by and says, hey, I'll give you $100,000 if you clean off that desk and, you know, make it look like a professional organizer owns that desk. Well, if I really want that $100,000, it's okay for me to start rearranging the desk, but I don't have to tie myself in knots with fear that I may not get it done in time or with negative judgments against myself. How did I ever let it get this sloppy? And that's what these messages are about. It's about what do I do with my mind energy inside myself? How much of my mind energy am I willing to turn into watching the process within my mind that's creating all of this turmoil and upset and judgment? And am I going to try and rely exclusively on the intellect and what's been programmed into it by my language and my family and my culture? Or am I going to step into a new way of living life in which I learn to be more present in the moment? I learn to ask my higher self for guidance. I learned to tap into what they would call in this work the Great Comforter or the Christ Mind. I would do that before I speak or take an action. And then watch the results. It's not laying out for me. And I've been reading them thoroughly, and I'm pretty sure that in the entire first 22 lessons of the Way of Mastery, there are no instructions for how to keep my desk clean. That's not what this is about. There are no instructions in the first 22 lessons for how to get a better job or how to get out of an abusive relationship. There are plenty of instructions for how to recognize how I'm creating negativity in response to those interactions that I'm having with the energy fields around me, whether the energy field is the desk or the energy field is the job or the energy field is the other person I'm in relationship with. So I'm doing this work and offering on this internet show because the more I use these tools, the better my life gets. I don't know that it's the absolute truth. I certainly don't think it's the only way to get good results. It's just a really effective, efficient way for me to experience a way of life that, to my sensibilities, is highly preferable to what I was living before I encountered these tools and began to apply them in my life. So again, the call-in number is 563-999-3581, and feel free to put your hand up even if I'm in the middle of reading. Lesson 23 in the Way of Mastery is titled The Voice for Love. And the text reads, "Beloved and holy friends," I hope you notice how many times you hear that word, that phrase. For me, it's a hallmark of this work because I've been around a lot of religions, a lot of church groups, a lot of organizations with a hierarchy that's based on the military, whether it's the Pope and the archbishops and the bishops and the priests and the, or some other structure of hierarchy. And I've never heard anything like the invitation to view myself as a beloved and holy friend the way I do in the Way of Mastery and in The Course in Miracles. But this book, Lesson 23, starts out again reminding us, you are beloved, you are whole, you are a friend, you are an equal. And we come forth to abide with you in this lesson, not from a place apart from where you are. How many times have you heard that kind of thing? How many times, why do they keep saying it? Because they're trying to help us undo the conditioning that most of us have been through that's conditioned us to see ourselves as separate from other people and as less than some and better than others. And this is a layered approach to undo conditioning that has us trained to see ourselves as separate from other people and see ourselves as less valuable than some and more valuable than others. And it's a very powerful, subtle way. They just keep repeating it. You are a beloved and holy friend, which means an equal. And you are right now, right where we are. There is no separation except for that experience of separation created by thought choices. The text reads, We come forth to abide with you in this lesson, not from a place apart from where you are, but from that place in which the sonship, in other words, everyone and everything that's arisen from the source of creation, the sonship is joined as one. Where can that be but in the mind of creation? And what is creation but love, all that is? Therefore, in each moment, when any mind surrenders its identification with its illusions, when it surrenders its identification with its own thoughts, with its own needs, with its own perceived desires, and then it rests in perfect silence, it rests into the voice for love, the voice for the one mind, the voice for the mind of creation itself. And it learns to ask only of that voice, quote, "What would you have me do in this moment?" close quotes. The text goes on and says, more and more, the voice for love begins to inform the decisions, the thought processes, the vision, the revelation, and in your world, the action or behavior that is expressed through the temporary coalescing of energy into the illusion of a body. Ask to be shown moment to moment. Ask to be shown before each spoken word, each action. What would you have me do in this moment? And who are you asking? You're asking the source of all creation. You're asking the intelligence that keeps your heart beating and your food digesting and your breath moving even when you're not thinking about it. Your cells taking in nutrition, eliminating waste, and rebuilding worn-out parts. Ask to be shown. Learn to live in the question after you've asked, without demanding an answer. Having the understanding that if you ask before you think or speak or act, whatever follows will be okay. It may not be exactly what you would want. It may not be exactly what you think should happen, and it will be all right. To read that last paragraph again, it says, more and more, the voice for capital L love begins to inform the decisions and the thought processes, the vision, the revelation, and the action or behavior that is expressed through the temporary coalescing of energy into what we call the illusion of the body. Beloved friends, we come forth from that place which is the voice for love. And if any mind can indeed rest into that place, it can only be because that place is necessarily within that mind. It is the depth of the soul. That depth is not an individual. It is universal, it is eternal, and it is forever present. It knows no boundaries. It knows no time. It is simply capital L love. So we abide in that place, and we speak forth from that place. And remember, they said earlier on this lesson on the same page, you are in that place right now. And it text goes on and says, and if you would well receive it, if at any time when you in your mind are struck by the truth of what is being shared, it is only because you have chosen in that moment to open your own internal access to the voice for love. What is triggered, what is activated or remembered is that part of you that is love itself, the capital L love, the energy of creation, the spark of the one mind itself. That part of the self in the depth of the soul, that is forever one with all of creation. The text goes on and says, the great trick of evolution, if you would permit me to use such a term, is to grow the soul's awareness so that it rests in that depth of silence and yet does not need to withdraw or turn away from the expressions of creation to do so. That is, it need no longer judge the body. It need no longer judge the world that you see around the body. It need no longer strive to ascend to some spiritual height in which all the things of life disappear. But rather, to the contrary, the soul that is in its maturity has ascended into union with the voice for creation, the voice for love, the voice for God. Use whatever word you want there. That is, it has ascended into the depth of itself, capital S self. It has learned to stabilize itself in that internal silence. It has, through time, experienced the process of transformation in which even the conscious mind is no longer thinking for itself, but the conscious mind is informed from the depth of the true capital S self, the depth of the soul, the voice for love, God herself, Christ herself, creation itself, the one mind. The list of words you could use there goes on and on and on, because the word is not the thing. The next section is titled, The Decision to Become One with the Mind of God, or the Mind of Creation. And the text reads, Beloved friends, the way of transformation then involves the deliberate decision to allow the translation of perception so that it becomes of one mind, of one accord with the mind of creation. It is informed from the depth of the silence and love that sees the body, that sees the world, and that sees each moment only as that which holds the value which the Holy Spirit has placed on it. So again, they use the word silence here, and as I was trying to point out in the last lesson, to me what they mean by that silence is looking at something without letting the process of perception churn into judgment and visions of separation and different values for different things. It's just seeing the false nature of perception, seeing the false nature of judgment, and releasing any attachment I might have to the thoughts that say I'm identified with this or that is better than that. The silence is not about a lack of physical noise. The silence is about the dismantling of perceptions. So in that sense, it's the same definition as the word forgiveness. And rather than me putting my perceptions and my values and my definitions on things, I ask to be shown. And in this place, they're saying the Great Comforter or the Holy Spirit or the Christ mind, I'm asking to be shown from some mind or intelligence that is more whole and more integrated than my intellect could ever be. The text goes on and says, what is the Holy Spirit? It is that part of your own right-mindedness that knows, and this word is italicized, so it's been the felt sense, the true experience without all the extra judgment and perception around it. It feels the truth. It knows that only what is the essence of creation is real. Only capital L love is real. When any mind rests in that silence, it knows that it can no longer draw conclusions about what love would do and about what love would express through it, or how love would use the particular tools or gifts of any seemingly individual self in order to trigger, to nudge, to uplift, or to shock any other aspect of the sonship into desiring its own awakening. I'm not going to second guess what happens after I ask to be shown. I'm going to ask to be shown and take a step. I'm going to ask to be shown and take a breath. I'm going to ask to be shown and speak what wants to come from me. Without the judgment, without the intense emotion, without the contraction, without the fear and sadness, the text goes on and says, now, if you pay close attention to what was just said, the implication is perfectly clear. Capital R reality, what Michael Rice would call actuality, is one thing. It's unshakable, and only it is real. And it is love, and only love is real. Yet the dream should never be denied, for denial creates separation. Embracing can allow healing, the healing that love brings, capital L love brings. As you well know, there are indeed many minds that are still afflicted, still harboring the decision to believe that the dream of separation is real. When any mind within the sonship chooses to awaken and heal its own illusions, capital L love begins to inform that mind more and more and more so that its expressions serve the voice for love. The voice for love has only one purpose, to be extended into the dream, into the illusion, to nudge the aspects of the sonship that are yet sleeping, so that the entirety of the sonship can be returned or reawakened to the reality, the actuality of itself, as the conduit through which creation extends herself. When any mind truly awakens, it no longer sees specialness in the world at all. Each moment is merely surrendered into what I once called the will of my Father. What is that will? It's the impetus of love. How can love operate so that it brings awakening to the minds involved? That is a purely creative process and is the only true value that time can have. The awakened mind has no idea one day to the next what love will ask it to do and how love is to be expressed through it. The awakened mind knows that it is not the maker or the doer. It merely asks in every moment, quote, what would you have me do? Close quotes. The more that practice is developed, the more that mind is refined and purified. It becomes almost a spontaneous or second nature kind of thing in which the mind is so closely aligned with the will of creation that the subtle nudges flowing forth from the depth of the capital S self, from the depth of capital L love itself, stirs the various conscious minds and meets no obstruction born of fear. For where fear has been devalued, love springs forth. Each and every one of you that has chosen to read these lessons has already made the decision to become that one, ever more deeply and ever more deeply. Make no mistake about it, the decision has already been made, and therefore the end is perfectly certain. when that mind that has made the decision to allow its transformation embraces the simplicity of its lived experience, it looks as though it is very ordinary. While the body lasts, you do the things that all bodies and minds do in your dimension and world. You perhaps find the body shivering against the winter cold or sweating in the summer sun. Yet in the midst of the context of the experiences of your life, what is informing the mind is not the egoic desires of, quote, how can I get more? How can I avoid a certain experience or feeling? How can I make myself comfortable? How can I get another's approval? How can I be acknowledged as a great master? Close quotes. In the midst of the context, when you're asking, what would you have me do? When you're connected to the great comforter, the Holy Spirit, none of that runs the mind. Each thing that arises, each context, each event, every place you find yourself in your life is surrendered within the mind itself and surrendered over into the will of love or the Creator or the Holy Spirit. And that mind, through the personality, through the body structure, as long as the body lasts, becomes a conduit that serves the voice for love. That one may not be understood. That one may not be approved of. That one may not be acknowledged at all by the world. And yet, rest assured, those who seek to be approved of and acknowledged by the world, they already have their reward. And what reward is it to be acknowledged by the insane who are dwelling in illusion? Can an illusion truly acknowledge the worthiness of the offspring of creation? Once again, each and every one of you is in an inevitable journey now. You too shall have your reward. For there are those of us who know you and love you, and your acknowledgement comes not even from us, though perhaps through us, but it comes from that one that has birthed you to extend the good, the holy, and the beautiful. When your reward is the very thing you're doing, then you don't look for reward. Guy Finley has a line, I've quoted this a number of times before, he says, all good things come to those for whom the good is all things. If I'm doing what I'm doing in order to acquire or achieve something else down the road, I'm stuck in the illusion of time and separation, and I'm chasing after something that I don't already possess, so I've created the illusion that there's something missing from me. And the essence of these deep spiritual truths and teachings is you are whole and complete just as you are. There is nothing of value that can be taken from you and nothing of value that can be added unto you. And if there's any truth to that at all, any time I go out searching and seeking outside of myself for something, for some gratification, for some kind of a reward, I'm in error. It can't yield good results because I've started from a false premise. What's that premise? I lack something. I can't be happy unless I have something else other than what I have in this moment. That must, by definition, be false. And it must yield the same kind of frustration as trying to move a mountain with my hands. It can't work. I'm not saying I can't move a mountain, but I'm not going to do it with these two hands. I'm not saying I'll never have satisfaction, but I'm saying I won't have satisfaction if I go searching outside of myself for it. So, just in case you missed it, what they're recommending is we live a life in which moment to moment, day in and day out, rather than acting from the intellect, we engage in the practice of asking to be shown before we say or do anything. And when we get really good at it, before we think anything. And we recognize the flow of thoughts, as we were talking about yesterday. It's just that, a flow of energy. And if I try to stop a flow of energy, what I do with it is I make it go in a circle. But I can't stop energy from moving. When I try to stop energy from moving, I create a spin. I create a repetition. I create a circle of energy of moving. And I get to live with it over and over and over again because it's a futile thing to try and stop energy from being in motion because all energy is in motion. So if my thoughts are just energy and they're moving through the field of my mind, and I try to grab onto some thoughts and repeat them over and over and over again and not have anything but those positive thoughts, or I try and push away negative thoughts or keep myself from feeling them, all I'm doing is adding energy to the energy. It's got to spin and go nowhere, and that is the source of most, if not all, of my negativity. It's born from the judgment. It's born from the opposite of allowance. It's born from the opposite of what lesson 5 in the Way of Mastery let us know is the keys to the kingdom. What are those keys to the kingdom? Desire, intention, allowance, surrender, and humility. Desire, the energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through me in this moment. How do I find out what that is? I ask to be shown. Intention, I keep my focus of my mind energy on my intention to stay aligned with what creation would like to express through me in this moment. I keep myself asking. I stay aware. I live through observation. I ask to be shown. I learn to live in the question. Next, allowance. I stay vigilant for the signs that some part of my mind or body is in tension about something, is resisting something. And when I have tension or resistance or judgment or negativity, I breathe and soften and release it. That's returning me to the state of allowance. The next step is surrender. I surrender and I ask to be taught by life, by love, by the flow of life itself, by God, by creation. And I ask and I observe, and I'm open to be changed by the flow of life, to be taught by life. That's the surrender. And when I do those first four things, my life experience is going to be so much more highly preferable to me. It's going to get so much better in various ways. I'm going to be tempted to take credit for it. And that's why the fifth and key to the kingdom is so important. I need to remember, wait a minute, that's kind of a slippery slope if I start taking credit for something because I don't even know when I was created or who created me. And I don't really even know how I digest the food I eat or keep my heart beating or my breath moving. So it clearly isn't me grabbing the bull by the horns and creating life and living life. Clearly something is living through me, seeing through me, breathing through me. I'm going to give the credit to that force, that greater intelligence, that totality of existence, rather than claiming it for this little part of my mind that I call the ego. So that's the intro to Lesson 23, and that's our first hour for today. I thank you all for being here and listening. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, the energy of creation expressing in form, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Kim. Appreciate it.
You're entirely welcome and deserving. Have a wonderful show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio, and today is Wednesday, October the 5th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael a moment to get dialed in, and as always, I will invite you to go to the website, whyagain.org, and scan around, click on things, use the tools, and I guarantee you'll see a difference in your life if you put the tools to work. We always tell people you don't have to believe a word we say, but just try them. They work. And I was just looking for a particular person's phone number. They were supposed to call in today. They're not on right yet for them. And Michael should be dialing in just any minute. And what can we talk about until he gets on? I thank everybody for their questions and comments. We've had some good conversations for the last few days. Well, actually, the whole 11 years, but we've gotten into some deeper spaces, some people that have been doing the work for a long time, and yet they're going to the next level. And, you know, I don't know anybody that's arrived yet, nobody, including Michael and myself, who don't need to do the work that, you know, we continue, stuff gets in our face, and we have to do a worksheet or breathe or, you know, and so it is a process. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Honored and delighted that you're here. I'm actually sitting out getting some sunshine today. So you may hear some birds. We've got some noisy birds in the background here. But otherwise, we have an awesome, gorgeous day here. It's about 67 or 68 degrees, perfect blue skies, beautiful sunshine. The only impact we got from Ian was a little bit of wind 2 or 3 days before it even struck. We had a lot of wind. And interestingly, as when it was supposed to get up here, we had mostly calm days. They were cloudy, but a little bit of spitting rain. We just got gorgeous weather today. So welcome. Glad you're here. Ready to move forward in this awesome understanding of first century Aramaic forgiveness and all the corollary tools that we've developed over the last half century to go along with that first century technology. I was talking to someone this morning who's been doing the work for years, and we were both marveling at how, as our view of the world gets bigger, the import of this technology becomes more and more clear and more profound. So delighted that you're here. Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is all quiet. I had just before you got on the phone, I said I was looking for somebody's phone number that we were hoping that they would be on, and I didn't see it at that time. I believe they are with us, and they have a hand up.
Cool. Well, let's say hello. Awesome. Let's go for the hand.
904, you're on the air. Who do we have?
How are you today?
Hey, we're rocking.
Hi,
how about
we're
you?
Good.
I think I'm live too.
Cool. You sound very much alive. Who are we talking to?
This is Michael.
Well, I'm Michael too, so delighted to meet you, Michael. Welcome.
Pleasure, sir.
Fabulous. So how can we serve you today? What's on your mind?
Not quite sure. Being quite straightforward about it.
Okay.
I have a little ESA dog, and he and I have been fighting homelessness for the past 15
Ouch.
Years.
Mm. Well, you know, I lament and I hold a space of love for you. I look at this culture with the amount of wealth that it has and that homelessness is even possible is insane. That's my take on it anyway. It's just like, how can that happen?
We've been lucky enough to at least been helped out with a car. So we're not on the street. I was on the street before I got him. Now I've had him for 8 years. But I was in Salt Lake City, in a box in the middle of winter kind of thing. And luckily,
ouch,
I've been mostly in. That wasn't fun. You tend to hang out in the library a lot, because
right,
it's some place to be.
So you get to read a lot of books.
I've been a musician most of my life, and I've always luckily had a guitar, could do some street performing. That's what I did in Salt Lake till it got cold,
uh-huh,
could make enough to at least eat and survive, but nothing much more than that.
Well, I'll have to do some work on Envy on that ability to play the guitar. It was something that I wanted to do as a kid. And my mother, in her great wisdom, when I asked her that, decided that I should play the accordion. And after six months of accordion lessons, they took me to the academy or the conservatory to have me test. And they said, this kid should take music lessons. It's like, okay, I've had enough of that. And that was kind of the end of it. But I have actually gone out and bought a ukulele and a guitar to learn it, but I just haven't dedicated the time it takes to do it. So I'll do envy work on you having that skill. That's awesome.
Well, I see. Mine is more just God given. I had about a year and a half worth of lessons when I was about 9 years old, and I learned the basics. But all the finger picking and I learned a traditional Irish tuning from a lady, Trish Hutton, over in Ireland. She used to tour with Lords of the Dance and be one of their main violin players. So she
how'd
is
you get
phenomenal
connected with her?
I worked at Busch Gardens in Williamsburg in 2001. And up in Williamsburg, or down in Williamsburg, it's countries. Down in Florida, it's more like safari and animals. But up in Williamsburg, it's more countries. You go in. They used to have Germany and England. And I can't remember what part of the country they closed, but then they opened it as Ireland. And they actually brought over all these kids for the initial year from Cork, Galway, and Dublin to work and perform in Ireland. Yeah. At one point, they even brought over the actual real mayor of Killarney, and he was in the park for the weekend.
Wow.
Yeah,
well,
very,
that
very
like
good.
Well, type of wealth you've had the good fortune of engaging in. That's pretty awesome.
Well, I've been quite lucky. Other than being homeless, I've been very lucky. I used to be one of the top 10 comedians in Chicago in 89. I've got to work with a ton of people.
So were you a comedian or a comic?
Comedian.
Jeannie and I watched a video on YouTube the other day, and there was a comedian. And he distinguished between those two. He said a comedian is someone who says funny things, is someone who says things funny. I thought that was a pretty interesting distinction.
Yeah.
Well, one of the other sweet things we share with you is back actually about probably 10 or 12 years ago, we were in Hawaii on Big Island of Oahu. No, not the Big Island, on Oahu. And they have it's the Seventh-day Adventists. They have a village that they have set up that's kind of a safari type of thing. And what they've done is all the outlying islands throughout the whole Hawaiian chain, there's a whole lot of poverty. And so what that church did is they set up this village. We actually were so impressed with it, we went back twice, 2 days, maybe a third day. I don't remember exactly. Jeannie will remember. But anyway, they had like Tonga, and each of the islands had a section in this village, and they had native peoples, and they had, you know, the native way of preparing food and the native way. They were really supporting these young people being able to get an education. They worked in this village. They brought their traditions, their genuine traditions, and displayed them in the village, and in return for that, they got to go to college. I thought that was pretty cool.
Oh, that's
and it
great.
Was just, it was awesome to go through and experience all those different places in one, you know, one fell swoop. That was pretty cool. So it sounds a lot like what happened as you were working up there. So the trick has been to translate your wealth into money so that place to lay your head becomes a reasonable thing to do. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. Yeah, the problem there is when I had moved to Florida, it was easy to find work. I could just walk into a bar with a guitar, say, let me audition, and while they're cleaning up or whatever, I'd just play a song. And usually about halfway through the song, they'd stop me and say, when can we have you and how much do you want? Because I've been around, and I'm not the greatest thing in the world, but I know what I'm doing, and I've gotten pretty good. And, but nowadays, because of being I'm basically homeless because of the 2008 semi-depression that we had.
Right.
All my work
knocked out a lot of people.
I was working 5 days a week, sometimes two and three times a day on the weekends, and all that went down into one gig a week. And I just couldn't afford to live anymore. So, and then I had two cats that died within weeks of each other over Thanksgiving and my birthday, and that kind of destroyed me. And then the car died, and when that happened, and I had no money to get anything, that's when the homelessness started. And when that began, then you know, getting years into it, my anxiety's gotten very bad. And it's hard to even just walk into some place and try to get an audition. Everybody wants, you know, well, do you have a YouTube channel? Do you have, you know, people that come and see you? You know, and I'm...
Do you have a following
no
to bring to us?
Yeah, and so...
Yeah, I hear that. I went through that when publishing a book. I looked for a number of different publishers. I ended up publishing my book myself, but everybody wanted you to have the audience to bring to them to buy the book. So I ended up publishing it myself. I kind of have a bit of understanding of that track.
If you could do that, then you wouldn't be at the publishing company, you know, if you had all those people that wanted the book. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, that's what set me on the path, or part of what set me on the path of, okay, well, instead of doing things locally, I'm going to go out and start to travel nationally and internationally to build an audience. And I'm actually, the book's been out of print now for 25 years. We just started last week in rewriting it to get ready to publish it once again on the first century Aramaic forgiveness process.
Well, good for you.
So how can we support you? What are you ready for?
I have no idea. I'm in Pennsylvania right now. It's getting to be a little too cold. Might have to head back to Florida. Do not like Florida at all.
It's a mess right
like
now. That's
the
for
state
sure.
Of mind. Don't like the dirt and sand everywhere. When I started coming heading up north, I was like, oh my God. Things are green again. You know, I really miss the green everywhere. And I had no idea how much I missed that in the season. But
I used to live in Fort Lauderdale.
Oh, wow.
I used to live in Fort Lauderdale. What became clear to me was, in South Florida, that it was a rat race, and only the rat won. And that's when I got out of South Florida about 30 years ago. That's when we moved to Missouri. So I understand what that one's like. It's a pretty bizarre happening, especially with the politics going on today.
Oh, yeah, good Lord. Yeah, very bad down there. And still a lot of racism going on, for God's sake, you know. I was in Detroit in 1967 as a kid when the riots hit. And it's unbelievable that I'm still looking at basically that, you know? There's still people that just haven't learned.
Yeah, you'd think that that we could get past that one, wouldn't you, as a species?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I found that animals make much better humans than most humans that I know.
Well, my offering, what I've discovered in the work that I do, is that just because one has a human body doesn't mean they have a human life. Because a human life is not a body. You know, if you hold a newborn child and you tap into the essence of that newborn, what you very quickly discover is that the newborn, the energy of the newborn, is pure love, pure being. And that's a human life. And when we forget that, then all kinds of crazy things happen. And so, you know, really what my work is about is restoring people to the awareness of who they have always been and perhaps have forgotten, perhaps through trauma have had it beat out of them, you know, whatever the dynamics are, and how to remove the blocks that keep us out of that awareness so that we're restored to that state of being, what we are as humans. And then once that's discovered, the next thing we realize is that we're creators. And then we go about changing the dynamics. You know, if we've created our lives unconsciously and gotten ourselves into difficulty, then there are tools, you know, that's what I've spent the last 50 years developing. There are tools with which to work through to literally remove that unconsciousness that causes us to create, you know, silly stuff in our lives and do crazy things and be restored to ourselves, experiencing ourselves as love, and then being able to create our lives out of that condition of love. That's the whole bottom line of what I spent the last 50 years developing. And,
wow.
You know, and we offer it freely on a global scale. Our commitment is to make it available to every mind, heart, and being on the planet, regardless of financial circumstances or anything else. And this radio show has been going on for 11 years as support for people who want to step in and do the work it takes. It's not a magic bullet. It's not a magic pill. Things don't change instantly. But if one takes the tools that we've developed, you know, my original work, my background is in the field of electronics with a side study in physics. And in the electronics world, when you, you know, built or developed, troubleshot a piece of electronic equipment, it really didn't matter much what your philosophy was. The darn thing had to work when it came off the other end of the bench. So what I've worked on doing
is
developing tools.
So do you miss Radio Shack at all?
Oh yeah, well that's another world. That's another world.
Yeah,
another lifetime.
Sorry. As soon as you said electronics, because I used to work at a Radio Shack when I was about 17, 18, and I pretty much ran the store. The manager was 28, and he'd show up usually about 2 hours after the store. I had opened the store, and he'd stand at the door, and he'd just look at me until I saw him, and he'd go, "Nice day out today. I'm going to go ride my motorbike." And he'd just take off for the day, and I was like 17 running a radio. It was so great back then, you know, all the great stereos, and if I could fix something. Now, my dad was an electrical engineer, so I grew up with MacGyver attitude of,
right,
I can fix this somehow, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So I was fixing things that I had, and sometimes I'd fix it, and I had no idea what I did. And people would say, "Well, what did you do?" Try to be making up these little, "Well, I put this diode with such and this transistor," you know, I just might make something up, and they wouldn't know, you know.
Well, hey, we've got,
I didn't mean to cut
story.
You off there.
No, I'm with you. At 17, I went to high school in an area where about a block in front of the high school, there was an electronics store. And one day a buddy and I, at, you know, we may be 15, 16, got interested in speakers. And I didn't know anything about even how to wire a speaker up. So we went to this store to buy some speakers. And the guy, it was just a little two-man shop, TV radio repair place. And the guy running it's like, "You know, here's the speakers you want. And by the way, we'll discount them. We need some help to deliver this television set. Would you mind helping?" So I get in the truck and I go help him deliver it. And, you know, within 6 months, I was working there 40 to 50 hours a week and repairing televisions when I was in grade 12, going on the road, you know,
oh, that's great.
The evening after school. And so I can remember one particular time there was a transistor radio that had gone to the guy who was the specialist in transistor radios in the area, and he couldn't fix it. And my boss couldn't fix it. I said, well, let me try it. And 10 minutes later, I had that radio working. I have no idea what I did, just like you just said. I had no idea what made that radio work, but he was like, oh, my
I've
God.
I've done that so many times,
Bud Billings couldn't fix it. He was the expert in the area, and I couldn't fix it. And in 10 minutes, I got a raise. I think at that point I was making $1 an hour.
That's great.
So I hear you. So, you know, very much like, you know, the instrument, it's got to work when it comes off the other end of the bench. And if there's a problem in the creative process, which means we create trauma and drama and things like painful relationships and loss and hatred and fear and sadness and grief and homelessness, if we create those things, then you got to go in and troubleshoot the circuits that hold what didn't belong in the system that creates the anomaly. And that's what the technology from the first century Aramaic language is that I, you know, this the real core of my work. That's what that technology is. It's how you troubleshoot that, how you get to the root of what's creating the what appears to be the external problem. You know, I can't hear that station properly. Oh, there's an external problem. Well, no, actually, the fact that I can't hear the sound properly is a result of an internal problem. I got to go in and clean up and fix the internal mechanism. And when it comes off the other end of the bench, it's got to work. And so that's what I've done with these tools. It's the same thing. The mind's an instrument, and the cleanup job is forgiveness. And, you know, some people are willing to tackle the job and do it, and some people aren't. So and the people who do get results, and the people who don't. And you know, I don't know if you know the name of my book or not, but the name of my book is Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And virtually every human being in the world, when they hear that title, they just laugh because they've been there, done that. And they think that it's because of some external circumstance, not knowing that it's the internal circuitry that's off base and needs repair. And forgiveness is the tool of repair for the internal circuitry of the human mind, the human creative system, and restoring it to full capacity, full ability. And that's the core of what this work is about. So
I was doing okay when I came back up to PA. Because I kind of had a goal that I was going for, and I kind of took control of the anxiety when I got here, and I actually got to a couple of music gigs, and then one of the places that I was working a lot, the bar manager seemed to be a little lackadaisy at being a good bar manager, so that gig totally fell out. And then that kind of destroyed me because I was on the way. That's all I need is some place to be, a couple of gigs every week because my Social Security doesn't pay enough to get a room.
Right.
So, yeah. So
I hear you.
When that fell out, it's just now I'm back in the same place and the anxiety is kind of stronger than I am again, you know.
Uh-huh.
And everything's kind of closing in, you know. The food stamps, you know, just ended for some reason. I have to try to re-up that and, you know, things like that. Car insurance was, for some reason, it was way too high this month. And luckily I called somebody and they straightened it out, but still it's a little high. And, you know, little things like that start taking you over.
Right. Well, my offering is that what happens is, you know, one of the things I've done a lot of work with and a lot of study on is stress. I've listened to some of the best experts in the world, and I've never found anybody that can tell you what creates stress. They can tell you some things to do, you know, to change the effects of it a little bit, but I've never been able to find anybody that could tell you how stress is created. But you know what? You just mentioned the key to stress. You said, I got back up here and I had a goal. And when you create a goal, that goal creates stress. When that goal isn't achieved, then stress tends to go through the roof, and that's what causes the mind to go into dysfunction. So what has to happen, we've actually got a worksheet called a mind goal management sheet. And when you start to take charge of your goals, and when you're overstressed, when your mind is bringing up all that old trauma that's not been resolved, and you know that there are goals involved in your mind with which you're creating the stress that knocks your mind out of proper function, then what you do is you start removing the goals. And when you remove the goals, you remove the stress. When you remove the stress, you get your function back. You get your faculties back. Otherwise, when overstressed, the faculties are just blown out. It's just like, you know, the mind doesn't function properly.
Yeah.
And so the core of the forgiveness process, interestingly enough, is, and we have a worksheet of step-by-step, here's how you forgive. Here's how you get the stress out of your mind. So, you know, it's kind of like a computer. If you think about a computer and you open your computer and you open your math program, your calculator. And, of course, you just zip through numbers, no big deal. You open your email program, you zip through things rock. You open your word processor, and things are okay. By the time you get your CAD program open, it's getting a little slow. And when you open your synthesizer, the computer crashes. All those programs open means that the systems are overwhelmed, the resources are used, and the function crashes. The human mind is no different. Every time we set a goal, it uses resources. When too many resources are tied up in a goal, the mind crashes. And that's when we go out of tune with what our capabilities are. So as strange as it might sound, you know, interestingly, in the ancient Aramaic language 2,000 years ago, the word forgive does not mean anything that even resembles what we've been taught in this culture is forgiveness. You know, we're taught that, you know, you did something terrible that caused all this pain inside me, but it's okay, I'll forgive you. But in Aramaic, the word forgive represents a tool with which you go inside yourself and change the content of your mind. And the word actually translates, the word is shebag in Aramaic, and it translates to cancel. And so, strangely enough, when you find your mind overloaded, when you start canceling the goals that you hold, you disengage the resources that are being used up by that goal, and you get your resources back. And when you get your resources back, you get your intelligence, you get your capability back, and you get to function with full resources stress-free. Or, pardon me, not stress-free. You never want to be stress-free, because if you're stress-free, you die. But with levels of stress that allow you optimal function. You know, you work with your computer and you learn that, well, I can open the CAD and I can open the synthesizer, but I can't open the word program at the same time. If I do, it crashes. So I'm going to cancel the word processor, and I'm going to write some music with my synthesizer, and I'm going to use my word processing program to record what I'm doing. Computer runs fine. The minute I try to open and use extra resources, it crashes. Mind is exactly the same. So my input would be to engage in the process of looking at, you know, when you recognize that moment at which things started to crash for you and it was related to goals that you had, when you start canceling those goals, instead of your mind being in overwhelm and literally what we call thought disorders taking over, you get restored to full proper function. And then you pull out of that nosedive that came from being overloaded with stress, and you get back on track and you get your life back. Kind of like with country music. You know what happens when you play, you've heard what happens when you play country music backward?
What?
You get your truck back, you get your dog back, you get your girl back, you get your house back.
There you go.
There you go. So my offering would be, one of the most important things you could do is to begin to look at the goals that you're carrying around. And, you know, a lot of times it looks like, oh, what could have been, or what should have been, what might have been, what I wish had been. And that represents those goals that keep our minds in overwhelm so that we don't have the resources to function as we know we could be functioning. And what I hear you describing is you've loaded too many goals in your mind. It puts you in overwhelm, and your mind crashes. You want to take it out of crash state. You want to reboot it, cancel all goals, and then start with just, you know, what's in front of you. What is there that I can do today that will enhance my life? Load that goal and work on that goal alone. Then the next day, maybe load two goals, maybe three. And when you find yourself, you get to the point where, oop, too much stress, too many goals loaded, then I'm going to back off, cancel those goals, start over again with a fresh mind, with full resources functioning. So that, you know, if I get up on the stage and I'm, you know, there to do some comedy, my brain's there, fully functional, and I can pull those one-liners out, and I can remember that joke, and I can do this. Or, you know, if I'm going to sit at the guitar, I can, instead of just being befuddled by the emotional stuff that's moving and the seeming lack of resources, I can get back to full function. And that, yeah, in a nutshell, now there's more to it, but in a nutshell, that's my offering for what's going to offer you full, total, complete recovery and return to the truth of who you are as a human being and the functions, the faculties that you have as a human. And it sounds like to be on top of, I mean, I think one of the most difficult things in the world to do is comedy. And so you got to be pretty bright for that, to be on top of the world. In that world, it says you've got the full faculties. Can you stop and look at when you saw yourself getting so many goals activated that you were overwhelmed and stopped functioning properly? Can you remember what
was
going
on?
That you,
from being homeless, that's all that did it. I'm still, if I'm on stage, I'm still 100%. But I haven't been a comedian in a long time now. I've been a musician for the past about 20 years.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, anytime I'm on stage, I shine like I've never been off it. But as soon as I come down,
that's sweet.
You know, and everything hits me. And
let me ask a question.
Yeah.
What does that phrase mean, when everything hits me? So I go on stage. What have I done? I've let go of all the cares, all the concerns, all of the goals of the moment, and I've got my full resources back, right? I walk down off the stage, and what hits me? What hits me? Oh, I got to do this. I got to do this. I got to do that. I got to get that. Or I got to do this. I got to do that. And what happens? Mine crashes. I rest my case. That's exactly it. So my offering would be, when you step off stage and that starts to hit you, start becoming conscious of all the goals. You see, there are only two ways to get rid of a goal in the mind once you load it there. You've either got to achieve it, or you've got to purposely, consciously cancel it. If you never cancel it, it runs under the surface, and it creates levels of stress that just blow the mind out. So get up on stage, and next time you get off it and, quote-unquote, it starts to hit you, start looking at what are all the things, what are all the thoughts running through my mind? What do I need to do? What do I need to take care of? What do I need to get? What do I need to have? Who do I need to contact? What, you know, all the survival stuff, and start canceling those goals. Although it seems like, well, but I got to do those things. Yeah, that's great. But if you overload your mind, you can't do them. And so canceling those goals and getting your resources back, then only loading in your mind what you can actually achieve in the next waking period. If there's something that needs to be done tomorrow, I put it on my calendar and mark it for tomorrow. I don't put it in my mind as a goal for today, because if I do, it uses resources and I start to blow my mind out. We do that to ourselves without knowing it. And so I'd offer, there's your total solution right there. And when you step off the stage and you eradicate all those things that, quote unquote, you said hit you, all the goals that are involved in that, your mind will be restored and your capabilities will be back in your control. They'll be yours again.
So now all I need is a stage to walk off of. Did I lose you?
Michael, I think you're talking, but we're not hearing you through the phone. Hello, Michael.
Yes. Hello.
No, I was actually talking to our other Michael. I think you got disconnected. I'm not seeing him on the switchboard. Let me walk out.
Yeah, I'm not here.
Get him. Yeah, he's dialing back in. Hold on just a second, Michael.
That's all right, dear.
Oh, you were talking.
Talking to two different Michaels. He heard me say that Michael was dialing back in, and he goes, "No, it was me that got knocked off." I said, "Yeah, I know. I was telling the other Michael."
Too many Michaels here. Well, no, there can never be too many Michaels, can there? So I'm back.
Thank you for your time, sir. I don't want to keep somebody else from needing help here.
Well, if you have any other thoughts or any questions, you know, you're one of the things we say to people when they do that, maybe I'm taking too much time. We're here committed to support you as long as you have the tiniest question or thought that we can support you in. So there's nobody else waiting in line. Doesn't matter if there are 200 phone calls in there. The only person we're going to work with is you until you're complete. And if you take the whole hour, that's great. Then everybody that's listening is going to gain from what your process is. And then the next person, when they come on, they'll get full attention, and everybody will gain from what that person's process is. So if you have any other thoughts or anything else we can support you with, this is the time to go for it. And we're here to do it.
Good Lord.
It's our privilege and our honor to do so.
Well, I appreciate that, sir.
Honored
yeah,
and delighted.
I'm blanking right now, so
okay.
Probably a ton of things I could bring up, and I'm blanking.
Well, here's my thought. Maybe grab a notebook, and as you process through this, I know that Susan maybe has given you some worksheets, or you might ask her for one, and just engage in the process, and then if questions come, you know, call back in tomorrow, the next day, the next day, the next day, or 10 years from now, and we'll be here having this conversation the way we have the last 11 years, and it's a delight to talk with you and connect with you.
You too, sir. I certainly appreciate your time.
All right. Lots of love and blessings.
Same to you, sir. Cheers.
Okay. Take care. Cheers. Bye-bye. All right. Good conversation. Good questions. Thank you for the opportunity to open that space, Michael. Ms. Jeannie, do we have anybody else in the phone queue with a hand up or anything else happening in the chat room?
No, there's no questions. It's all quiet. So, somebody, if you press 1, you are first in line. And we'd love to hear from you. Susan's got her hand up, so let's turn her microphone
awesome.
On. Welcome, Susan.
Let's go for it.
Hey, I'm so glad my friend Michael came on, and thanks for that.
So am I.
I
was delighted to talk with him.
How, I wondered the explanation about the goals.
Right.
We have already given him a couple of application type of things. I haven't even looked at them. My sister is using food stamps, my younger sister, and I had her send Michael some forms to fill out so he could get back with food stamps. Now, of course, that's a goal.
Right.
And maybe even that is stressful for him. I haven't even talked. I'm upstairs, and he's in the basement apartment
right.
thing we have.
Sure.
I'd love to, since I may be working with him a little bit, if he's willing, I'd love to know what you recommend for finding where the stresses are. I think Michael's got so many that he probably doesn't even know what we're talking about, in a way.
Right, right.
So.
Well, I think when he used the words, "it all hit me," I think he was keying right into where the core of things are for him. And I think that might be a good thing to pursue. Pardon me.
Yeah. So maybe one goal is to get somewhere to live, or maybe one goal is to get more jobs. I mean, truly, he probably has a trillion goals that are kind of too.
And he knows what it's like to let go of all of those by just getting up on the stage and performing.
Yeah.
And he's recognized how they all come right back into the play when he steps off the stage. So that'll be, I think, a powerful thing to key into and be aware of and remember. And then, you know, it could be, you know, like filling out a form. A lot of people, you know, one of the things that happens in the arena of reading is that a lot of people, you know, brilliant minds, and they have to read something and they just go blank and they can't read because there were traumas that happened, you know, maybe in first grade in school around reading. And so that sort of thing is the kind of trauma that needs to be worked out and worked through. So there might be to sit down and do that sheet might mean, well, you know, gee, I'm nervous that someone's going to yell at me. You know, then the goal in that circumstance would be for people to speak to me when I'm engaged in, you know, writing, for people to speak to me lovingly, gently, and with respect. Canceling that goal will tend then to open the space for the mind to return to the place where the original offense, the original energetic assault occurred. And then returning to that moment and holding, as you know, is done in the previous step in the worksheet before you cancel the goal, holding to active present love is what opens the space for that to be resolved. So there could be many things that tie in with that sort of, you know, as long as things are rolling along and I don't have to sit down and figure out paperwork, you know, if I can get on the stage, I don't have to fill out an application. I just get up there, I audition, I do what I do best, my genius shines. And then the guy says, oh, well, you have to fill out a W-2. Oh, God, I got to write.
Yeah.
You know, just as an example. So whatever the other goals are, being in awareness of them, canceling them is what resolves the underlying trauma and leaves one free of the trauma so that more and more of the things that need to be done can be handled easily and with grace. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. So you said getting a notebook. Might it be useful, even before doing a wake-up sheet, to make a list of goals?
Just sitting and looking at all the goals, yes, yep. Survival and
okay.
Everything else. You just drop it in there if you would.
All right, that's good.
Thank you. Yeah, that would be a really good starting place. And then just start
Excellent.
Picking on those things one at a time and getting rid of them, cleaning them out.
Right.
And
good,
one of the,
you don't
one
have
of,
to do everything.
No, just this one, if you cancel every goal and do the one thing in front of you at this moment, that's all that's required. Everything
yeah.
else, let go of it. Or maybe the other way around, let its grip on you loose. Because we
right.
tend to carry around
Good.
These unresolved
yeah.
circumstances, situations, wishes, dreams, and traumas, and then wonder why. When they're engaged, we go, you know, we just go flat. We go dumb,
yeah.
you know, just can't function. And to get the resources
well,
back,
yeah,
that's
well,
how it's
I've
done.
Seen Michael play. I've seen him play. I've seen him sing. And I also had to draft him yesterday to help me out at the, I told you about that, the refugee center.
Right, right.
Perfect.
Yes.
I mean, you know, perfectly capable of doing everything. This is a highly functional human being. So something got,
I got
in
it.
There.
And bright.
Yeah.
Bright.
And bright.
Enjoyable to talk to. I really enjoy connecting with him.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Okay.
And,
well, thank
you know,
you. I just
there are
need...
thought disorders.
Yeah.
There are thought disorders
yeah.
under the surface that need to be accessed and removed. And when they're removed, the dysfunction will disappear, or the performance anxiety or whatever it is that happens will just
mm-hmm.
gradually disappear as the thought disorders behind it are addressed
mm-hmm.
and removed.
Yeah.
Sweet. Well, how about you? Are you still rocking with that new pacemaker battery?
I am totally rocking with it. It's just so wonderful to be normal and have my energy back.
Awesome.
I have a sore chest, but, you know, that's nothing. That's
yeah.
like I have to keep
yeah.
my arm still for a while, but that's nothing compared to the other stuff. We had a terrible time with Jacob. And this morning, on my daughter's advice, I blocked my phone. But by noon, I unblocked it again because I want to come to him fresh as if nothing has happened. But I don't want to be stupid.
Right.
So
yeah.
This is what I'm thinking about is how can I always greet him with the love I feel for him and give him this millionth chance to be different and give up the goal of having him be different.
Yeah.
I'm telling you. It's,
so I'd suggest that one of the most important worksheets you could do would be to cancel the goal to love him. Because that's a totally, completely impossible goal to achieve. It will always keep your stress level up, and it will never be achieved. Because love isn't something we can do. It's what we are. And the goal that would be appropriate to work with there is a goal to function as love in his presence. And when he shows you something other than that, to forgive it and go back as the presence of love. But loving him, not possible to do. Our culture, you know,
that's
has
true.
That language and pretends so, but
mm-hmm.
it's just not so. It's just not possible. So the goal for him to treat you lovingly, gently, and with respect, the goal for him to be responsible, the goal for him to treat his mother lovingly, gently, respectfully, the goal for him to stay sober, the goal for him to do all the things you want from him are all things that are going to elevate your stress level and show
yeah.
you what your next piece of work is, and then it will be about you, not him,
mm-hmm.
and you get to do the
mm-hmm.
next layer of work. How sweet is that? Doesn't get better than that. So what does that trigger?
Well,
what does
I'm
that move for
about
you?
What you said.
Uh-huh.
Sorry for the silence, but
no, silence is fine. Be with it.
It always comes back to my responsibility of my own feelings. Always. Okay, I get that. I do get that. And as for loving him, holding the active present love for him, functioning as love for him, well, that was unblocking his phone, for instance. That was, I think, doing that. Because it
just offering that
unkind.
Once more. Yeah.
It seemed unkind to block him. No matter what he's doing, I don't want to be unavailable. But then I have the goal of having him be safe or something. And maybe, anyway, I'm just finding it's a huge challenge to navigate this.
Well, you're taking on an issue that has been going on, I guarantee, in your family bloodline for eons.
Mm.
And that's, you know, that's big stuff. That's
yeah.
huge. And it doesn't happen in a heartbeat. And when you're the early adopter, the first one in the family that says, I'm going to do this, you just took on a huge challenge. What's happening?
Yeah. Well, nothing much. I'm just sitting here trying to let that sink in. I guess my expectations are too high. Really, really
yeah.
too high. Moment by moment by moment, I have to do this.
Well, my offering is your expectations can never be too high. The higher your expectations are, the deeper are the parts of your mind that are going to be shown. So what comes up? You know, I heard a little bit of sniffling in the background. I was wondering if it's grief, if it's sadness. What's moving for you?
No, I hate to tell you. I was trying to wipe up cat pee off a bureau. I just discovered that my cat did an offensive act.
Oh, well.
He's asking, which I really must stop doing, but I saw this offense in there, and I thought, oh no, that's not going to sit there. It's ruining the flow board.
Right.
So anyway,
right.
And the bureau. So, sorry, Marshall. No, I want to be here for Jacob in a way that is best for him, and I'm not sure
what
that is.
So what's the biggest emotion that blocks you from doing that?
Fear, of course. Fear that he's not going to be okay.
Okay. So now, can you cancel the goal for him to be okay and allow yourself to process through that fear? Which, if I think back to some of the things you shared about your early childhood, there was probably a lot of fear about being okay and surviving, right?
Even just having you say that is a relief in a way. We have more time, and there's more of God's imagination and more grace in the world than I am imagining at this point.
Right. So joining you in the manifestation of that grace and the forgiveness of that fear that he won't be okay, that he isn't going to survive. That's big stuff. When do you suppose the last time was with somebody in your family system who could face and process through that level of fear for themselves or their siblings or their grandchildren or what have you? When do you suppose somebody in the family system knew how to do that or did that? The truth is, it's probably never happened. And so
no,
here you are.
They never understood it. I don't think they understood what to do.
Yeah. So here you are processing that level of fear. How cool is that? Confronting that, holding it, being with it, facing it over and over and over again, each time you turn that phone back on, each time you think about him and the trauma that he's living in. Pretty huge.
This is so weird because I don't think he realizes he's living through trauma because he says that it's everybody else's fault.
Remember, that's the effect of denial. I mean, that's just hiding. You know, that's blockage of truth, hiding the truth from oneself. Oh, no, I'm okay. It's everybody else.
Yeah.
But give me a drink because I don't feel too good.
Right.
So, we can block that out. We can hide that from ourselves. That's what alcohol and drugs are for.
Yeah.
To keep that hidden. So how about a mind shifter?
Okay. I'm ready.
It's safe and healing.
Mm-hmm.
And joyful for me.
Mm-hmm.
To face.
Mm-hmm.
Feel. And heal.
Mm-hmm.
The fear of all of my generations.
Wow.
Can you imagine yourself being in the Garden of Gethsemane beside Yeshua, where he says to himself, all right, I'm a clear enough, powerful enough space of love right now that I'm going to open my field and I'm going to allow the trauma of the whole world to pass through me. I'm going to take that on, and I'm going to transmute it through my deep connection to active present love. Could you imagine yourself standing in the Garden of Gethsemane beside him and saying to yourself, and now I'm going to open the veil of my temple and stand so powerfully as a space of active love that I can process through all of the unresolved pain of just my generations, all the unresolved, in this case, fear of my generations. Can you imagine yourself
standing
there?
Oh, go ahead.
Just can you imagine yourself standing there?
I can imagine myself standing there, but I can't imagine even knowing what that fear is.
You don't need to know what it is. All you need to do is create the space to allow it to surface and move through it. You don't need
okay.
to, you know, that's the old brain that wants to figure it out. Oh, let me figure out what this it means.
Uh-huh.
No, you don't need to figure any of it out. That's the booby prize. All you need to do is stand as active present love, breathe, and let that energy move in and through your physiology.
Those birds.
Yeah, they're at it. They are on go.
Well, go ahead.
No, just they are on go.
Yeah. Well, I'm standing here and I'm open.
So I'm going to stand on the other side of you. I want to reach out and take my hand.
Okay.
And then reach out and take Yeshua's hand.
All right.
Connect to the hems of our garment. And just breathe and allow, without any need to understand any of it or comprehend it even, just to invite that pain and that trauma from a thousand generations to move through you and be released. And breathe into it. And you don't even know how to need to know how to do it, just to breathe it.
Okay. Magda just sent me a text, and she said, ask Susan if she has any fear for herself, not just for her grandson.
Can't answer that right now, but thanks for asking, Magda.
I can answer
do
it.
Have fear. Okay.
I can answer
yes,
it.
He says.
Absolutely,
okay.
Totally, completely, 2,000%.
Yeah, okay.
It's all smoke and mirrors. It's all projected. If there were no fear in you, you couldn't fathom fear for your grandson.
Okay.
If you saw him standing at the edge of the cliff and jumping off the cliff, you couldn't have fear for him unless it was fear in you. Yes, it's
okay.
All projection. It's all smoke and mirrors. And it's been going on for a long time in your bloodline and mine. And I'll certainly join with you in opening a space for it to be worked through.
Well, I'm just going to say yes.
Yeah. Sweet. Awesome. That's all that's needed. And just let the energy move. Let the breath go and let the energy move. And what's ready to move will definitely move. You can rest assured. And the show's about ready to cut us off, so we'll just continue to breathe with you until the show completes itself and says, yeah, honored, delighted, glad you're there holding a space for Michael. And say again?
I was thanking Jeannie and Magda. I feel them holding space.
Me too. Thank you, God, for community.
Yeah.